I have, and we both have the responsible task to finish not only this seminar with a talk, but also the seminar series as such, which was an exciting project. And we have seen and learned so much during the whole seminar and today, as you, I'm sure you could see, that it's very difficult to sum up. And I'm sure in discussions there will be more and more questions and very valuable comments made. We have seen so far, certainly what we've learned today has given us a lot to think about. And I think the most important point that brings everything together is the notion of best interest of the child and welfare of the child. We are concerned about what it is, how it's can be, has been redefined, and can be redefined in the future. And this, we've heard many specific parts, how it can be realized, and we can see now that it's a very, or what is needed, is a very multidimensional approach. Now, we would like to approach it from a very rights-based point of view, and you can see that the welfare of the child can be addressed or expressed in various different rights. What we are talking about is human dignity, prevention from inhumane treatment, fair, effective access to justice. And also, what we need to remember is that for these children who enter and come to state institutions and come in contact with these institutions, what is necessary for this welfare of the child and best interests of children to be realized is an effective access to healthcare, education, social and economic institutions. So we need a very multidimensional approach in order to actually be able to address the issue of access to justice itself and effective access to justice itself. And of course, the question that we are trying to find an answer to is to what extent neuroscience can help us realize this goal. Can it really? We have the experience of genetics and the debates in genetics, and we know how this discourse came about and how risky it became at certain point. But we are now richer of this experience. Yeah, we've learned a lot from the research in genetics and the discourse, the debates that have been going on in genetics. We can now move on and use this experience in other areas such as neuroscience. So we've learned, being cautious, as Professor Eastman has said, we've learned that neuroscience can provide very invaluable tools to give guidance on the ways in which we should respond at different stages of child's interaction with state institutions. And this is in terms of prevention, first, of antisocial behavior, criminal or violent behavior as well, access to social care, as well as education, and then during the civil and criminal proceedings. And I think Laura has made a brilliant point about the differences and the similarities and how we can bring these together and the comparisons that we can and should be doing. And also at the very last stage of rehabilitation and resocialization of these children. Now, there is a pressing need, and we've seen how neuroscience can inform these kind of debates. But also, there is another issue and another reason why we should be doing it, why we should be not only doing the work, why we should invest in more research on neuroscience. And this is because of the international dimension, international law dimension, European law dimension, and the obligations that stem from international and European law. So we have different levels here, and at the international as well as European level, what we can see really is a shift from a general human rights discourse to a more effective participation. Yeah, so the focus now is on effective participation. As Eileen and Laura have already mentioned, this is about the focus now is on effective participation, how we can actually realize rights such as access to justice. Now, in terms of international framework, international law framework, we have the UK is already bound by several treaties, international conventions, and different guidelines. So we have a list of guidelines that the UK has, to some extent, already been signatory to and has implemented to some extent. But of course, there is a lot more to do. So we have seen this shift from, as you can see, in the rights Convention on Rights of the Children, we have these general rights of, to prompt access to legal and other appropriate assistance, fair hearing, taking into account his the children's age or situation. So this is quite general. If we go to now, what is going on at the European level, this is becoming much more concrete and much more focused, as I said, on the effective participation. So we have the SC case of the UK, as Laura mentioned before, that has actually brought the issue of effective participation and the condition for a fair trial is now to understand what is going on. So the child has to understand what is going on and has the chance to participate fully. Now, this requirement has been then recently developed in the guidelines by the Council of Europe, which is that, and this is, I think, important for our discussion today about the fact that children's views, bearing in mind they have to be taken into account, bearing in mind their maturity and any communication difficulties they may have in order to make this participation meaningful. Yeah? These are guidelines. They are not binding. This is not a binding law. But this will inform the policies taken at the Council of Europe level. This will, to some extent, inform the way the Convention on Human Rights is interpreted by the ECHR. So this was, it might not seem important, but it does make a difference. It is important. We've heard today that although these obligations are in place, the UK is under, is under the obligation to conform with all these international obligations. It doesn't always, it's not always the case. But there are two consequences of, or two points that we have to bear in mind, and I'm soon giving it over to Karen. First is that neuroscience can provide a helpful tool in assessing this effective participation, the understanding of what is going on. And secondly, that if the UK, with help of neuroscience but also other disciplines, makes it right and has it, gets it right, gets its laws right, then it will be able to influence the harmonization process at the supranational level in the EU.